This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, May 18th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Boulder City Council met last night back in virtual chambers. Boulder Beat's Shay Castle will give us a roundup of what was discussed. Then we'll hear from an expert in bilingual education as the Boulder Valley School District mulls expanding dual language learning. As always on Wednesday morning, Chris Moore will share his commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then it's the Hightower Lowdown. On today's A Public Affair, we'll have a doubleheader of author interviews. Youth radio host Phoebe Donovan will be making her debut in a sit-down with young adult literature author Sayantani Dasgupta. At 9 a.m., we'll hear from Vince Waldron about a memoir he helped to co-author with rock icon Ronnie Spector. Following that at 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first a look at local and regional headlines with KGNU's Christian Garibay.
Boulder has lost its top spot in the U.S. News & World Report rankings of best places to live in the U.S. Boulder held the top spot for 2 years in a row, but dropped to number 4 in the new list released Tuesday. The more affordable Colorado Springs has surpassed Boulder to take a number 2 ranking. Denver and Fort Collins plummeted to 54 and 55 respectively on the list. The Denver Metro has seen a dramatic increase in average rent prices over the past year. KGNU's Kiara Damari has more.
Denver saw an average increase of over 14% in rent prices in the last year, according to the University of Denver and the Apartment Association of Metro Denver. Their survey found average apartment rents are now at $1,765 a month. A different analysis by real estate tech company Zillow found year-over-year home prices in Denver Metro shot up by 42%. Caleb Dickinson, co-owner of Fox Property Management in Louisville, told 9 News that occupancy rates are currently 96%, indicating that demand for housing in the area remains high enough to keep pushing rents and home prices upwards. The hikes in housing costs come as inflation in prices of other consumer goods, from groceries to gas, are pinching the pockets of many workers and far outpacing cost of living wage increases. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
According to a new report released by the Colorado Metropolitan Auto Theft Task Force, or CMAT, theft of motor vehicles has increased by 24% in the first quarter of the year. On average, nearly 100 vehicles are stolen each day in the Denver metro area. So far, the total of vehicles that have been stolen this year is 3,290. Arapahoe County is next with 1,931 vehicles, and Adams County is third with 1,685 vehicles stolen. When asked why so many vehicles are being stolen, Mike Greenwell of CMAT stated that, "We're arresting the same people and putting them in jail, and then we re-arrest them. Due to courtrooms being backed up and jails not having enough space, the penalty for vehicle theft has come down to either a fine, probation, or the felony is dismissed overall." School paraprofessionals in Denver Public Schools are calling for a wage increase. KGNU's James Swenson has more.
On Monday, about 200 district employees, parents, and community members rallied at Valdez Elementary in Denver, demanding that Denver Public Schools raise pay for paraprofessional to $20. Paraprofessional are individuals who provide support and instruction beyond that done by teachers. DPS pays these workers less than $16 an hour, and many report leaving their jobs or having to work two jobs. At the rally, one district worker said that her daughter qualifies for free lunches despite being a district employee. During the 2021-22 school year, the DPS temporarily moved 3 schools online because of staffing shortages. In a statement, the district said that the superintendent is committed to increasing salaries and look forward to continued discussion. For KGNU, I'm James Swenson.
This week, the Department of Labor found a Breckenridge contractor willfully exposed workers to trench hazards after a building caved in on 3 workers, one who was not able to escape and suffered fatal injuries. OSHA, or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, fined A4S Construction $500,000 in safety and building violations and placed them on the Severe Violator Enforcement Program. An investigation found the trenches at the building site had caved in on three previous occasions. The company failed to put in trench protections, which exposed workers to serious hazards, says a press release. A4S has 15 days to pay fines and meet with OSHA. According to an OSHA press release, from 2011 to 2018, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that 166 workers died in trench collapses. In 2019, OSHA reports that at least 24 workers died while working on trenching and excavation projects, with all of them preventable, had required safety measures been taken. Beginning May 28th, a Chautauqua park-to-park shuttle service will start back up and will be free for everybody. The service allows people to park at two designated locations so that they can get picked up by a shuttle and dropped off at Chautauqua Park. These locations are the New Vista High School parking lot and the CU Region parking lot. Riders can also get picked up downtown. The shuttle will run from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. every weekend and on summer holidays as well. The city of Boulder reinstated the program as a means for locals to have access to a cheaper, stress-free way to travel to Chautauqua Park without struggling to find parking or worry about taking a large group of people. A baby was born on a Frontier Airlines flight from Denver to Orlando. While mid-flight, the mother went into labor and began giving birth. Flight attendant Diana Giraldo then proceeded to assist the woman while she was giving birth. She was noted as being exemplary and calm by Captain Chris Nye, who was the pilot for the flight. The mother fittingly chose the middle name Sky for the baby as a result of the incident. Sunny throughout the Front Range today, humidity is extremely low and wind gusts could reach 6 miles per hour in some areas. In Boulder, a high near 82 and a low around 57. In Denver, a high near 82 and a low around 58. In Fort Collins, a high near 83 and a low around 52. Outside the Boulder studios, 57 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder City Council is back in the Zoom room of virtual meetings due to rising COVID rates, which included infections among at least two members of City Council. Joining me live for a roundup is Boulder Beat journalist Shay Castle. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
So, what were the finer points of last night's meeting?
Well, last night's meeting was one of those where they talked about a lot of little things for a very long time. I don't think we finished until 12:30 in the morning. But as you said, COVID is one of the things we actually didn't even get to, but to me is a big deal. We've been put back into medium transmission, you know, by the CDC's guidelines, and the wastewater sampling spike. It's not quite as high as the Delta spike in January, but it's on its way there. So significant transmission. And there was supposed to be an update on that at the end of the meeting. But, you know, about 12:20 a.m., council decided, oh, no, thanks. Just we'll send an email out. And of course, they, you know, as you mentioned, they were virtual. So that to me was a big deal. They also spent a lot of time talking about the East Boulder sub-community plan. Reminder, this is a plan for the next 20 years of development in East Boulder. That has yet to be approved because planning board and council have to agree on that. And they couldn't. Planning board wanted a hard cap on the number of jobs that could be added. And, you know, as staff discussed with council, that's not really how it's done. There are ways we can limit job growth, but a hard cap is not really reflective of reality. So those were the highlights from last night.
Well, and of course, with housing taking up so much time, that gears into cost of living. There was also discussion about a guaranteed income, or there's about to be. Tell me more about that.
Correct. Next week, and it's just a study session, so council's not going to be deciding anything, but they will be looking again. Staff has proposed using some of the federal COVID recovery dollars to launch a guaranteed income pilot project. And they'll be discussing, you know, how well these have worked in other cities. Lots of cities have done them using their COVID money, and they find pretty tremendous results, you know, increased employment, improved mental health, physical health, better outcomes for kids, you know, better nutrition. There's just so much that lower income people can do when they get, you know, even $500 a month for 2 years, which is roughly what we're looking at. So council is going to learn about more about that next week and discuss it, the potential approach to it. There was broad support for it already. But, you know, some of the members were unfamiliar with guaranteed income. It's kind of a new thing. And some were uncomfortable with the level of bureaucracy Boulder is proposing for that. So next week, we'll talk about how we're moving forward with that. But that could start as soon as next year.
Another measure that is going to be on the agenda moving forward, it has to do with firearms. Earlier this week, Denver City Council passed a prohibition on open carry on city property, the parks, inside numerous city buildings like libraries and museums. What is Boulder proposing?
Boulder is proposing that and much, much more. So they're proposing a ban on open carry and a ban on concealed carry in sensitive places, like some of those you mentioned, raising the age of purchase for firearms from 18 to 21, reinstating the assault weapons ban, banning ghost guns, which are ones 3D printed at home without serial numbers, requiring signage to be posted in place where firearms are sold, warning of the health risks. It's a whole suite of legislation that they and I believe a few other Boulder County towns and the county itself are considering. So it's a, you know, the last time Boulder banned assault weapons, it was a big deal, very long public hearing. I would expect more of the same this time. Although, you know, we heard from some folks at last night's meeting supporting those measures in the wake of all the gun violence that Boulder has seen since then, you know, Buffalo with another mass shooting. So maybe the public sentiment has changed, but obviously gun control always a hot topic.
Well, Shea Castle, thanks as always for coming on the program, even when there's a late night, past midnight city council meeting. It's always much appreciated. Thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.
And you can find Shea Shine Castle, or you can find her on her Twitter handle at Shea Shine Castle, or read her work at boulderbeat.news. We'll be right back. The Boulder Valley School District is exploring how to best expand bilingual literacy for kindergarten through 12th grade. KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Dr. Tanya Godinez-Hogan, director of CU Boulder's Bueno Center, about the best models for bilingual education.
I am Dr. Tanya Hogan, and my advice, I think, would be, as a caution, is oftentimes what we see and what we've read about in the research is that sometimes when we create dual language programs, the people it benefits the most is often not the native Spanish speakers that it was intended to, and it ends up benefiting more the English speakers in the dual language program. And we see that because they're the ones that, you know, when they get the seal of biliteracy, it's more English speakers who learn Spanish getting it. And so one of the things we want to make sure is, as we advocate for dual language immersion programs, that we're also advocating for equity in dual language immersion programs. So it's not solely, oh, let's create these dual immersion programs, because oftentimes it's in neighborhoods where they have more wealth and versus where it's needed and is going to be actually culturally sustaining. And so a cautionary tale is just making sure that that is a consideration and that someone is monitoring that it's also equitable and just for our families.
What are the modalities that are offered in bilingual ed, and which ones are the most appropriate from your point of view?
Mm-hmm. Probably the most common ones that you will find are either the dual language immersion, which is, you know, you have native Spanish speakers with native English speakers, and they're both learning English and Spanish. And in my opinion, that's probably one of the best programs because it's about maintaining your language. So if I'm a native Spanish speaker, I am learning English as I am maintaining my Spanish language as well. So in the end, the goal is biliteracy, biculturalism, and we expect that to hopefully continue. Unfortunately, what we often see is that the programs end in elementary school, and there's very few that move on to middle and then to high school. The other type of program that's very common, especially in Colorado, is the transitional native language instruction. And so you get Spanish instruction in the beginning, but the goal is to transition to English. And so oftentimes we while that is good to be getting your native language instruction, it tailors off because the goal for that is to learn English, be in English. And so oftentimes the biliteracy is not maintained. And we often refer to that as more of a subtractive program because the goal is English, where dual language immersion is more of an additive because the goal is biliteracy. And so we would advocate and for the biliteracy piece of being able to have that and offer that K-12 and beyond. I think in college we would encourage that, you know, there are classes that are offered bilingually and that students could continue to write college papers even in Spanish if they wanted to. But that's something we have to work on, I think, in the state.
The census is showing us that the population of Latinos in the state of Colorado has increased already, and it continues to increase, and is projected to increase more. The need to maintain the culture, the language, and to be proficient in both, it seems like it's urgent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. And we can't compartmentalize languages. I think my first language is Spanish, and I think in both languages, I know when I'm a speaker, like before when you just arrived here, I was mixing back and forth between English and Spanish. I know I don't have to worry about what I have to say in English, or I can quickly cambiar español and you understand exactly what I was saying. And so it's something about our brains don't have to think. We say and speak what we need to. And so I think that's honoring the culture, honoring the language. And that's why we appreciate schools that accept translanguaging. And that's really accessing your full linguistic repertoire and being able to just use what comes to you. And for kids, they might be, even in a dual language immersion program, they might be learning something in English, but their brains may be thinking about it in Spanish. And when they go to write, some of the words might be in English, some might be in Spanish. It's not wrong. They're using their biliterate brain. And we have to nurture that and cultivate that and make sure that we are supporting that development versus like saying, no, you have to say this in English and you have to say this in Spanish. There's a beauty of us being able to be bilingual.
That was Tania Godinez-Hogan, director of CU Boulder's Bueno Center. She was speaking with Rosana Longo-Better, who will be hosting a call-in panel discussion tomorrow with BVSD Superintendent Dr. Rob Anderson and board member Richard Garcia to talk about how BVSD is planning on expanding bilingual education. We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The leaked draft opinion of Samuel Alito, one of the so-called originalist judges on the Supreme Court, cited Sir Matthew Hale, a pre-revolutionary English judge from the 1600s who created the legal tradition that husbands cannot be prosecuted for raping their wives, and who literally sentenced women to death as witches, as precedent for overturning Roe v. Wade. The ultra-conservative majority on the Supreme Court also just gave Ted Cruz carte blanche to use post-election campaign finance money to repay Ted's campaign loans, so Cruz and other politicians could receive hundreds of thousands of dollars from lobbyists to be paid directly into the politicians' pockets. Brnovich versus DNC and Americans for Prosperity versus Bonta have also in recent months gutted other provisions of various campaign reform laws, allowing more and more dark money to flow into the coffers of politicians unanswerable to the public. New York State versus the National Rifle Association is a move to upend a 100-year-old gun safety law in New York, and this same 9-member court will soon rule on that. And that's why some people want Congress to expand the Supreme Court. Last year, Representatives Mondaire Jones, Hank Johnson, Jerry Nadler, and then Senator Ed Markey introduced the Judiciary Act of 2021, legislation that would expand the Supreme Court from 9 seats to 13. A Navigator research poll last week showed that, by a 5-point margin, registered voters supported, quote, adding more justices to the Supreme Court beyond the current 9 seats. 42% to 37%, with 21% uncertain. This is a huge increase from the tepid support this proposal received before the Leet Alito draft abolishing Roe v. Wade. Advocates claim they're only matching the number of circuit courts out there. Expanding the Supreme Court isn't only about playing defense to respond to the erosion of our democracy, they say. It's also about building something that works for all of us, not just the privileged and powerful. And that's something every single U.S. senator and representative should support. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's historic confirmation is a crucial first step to rerouting the deeply troubling anti-democracy path the Supreme Court has taken, but we still have work to do, pass the Judiciary Act of 2021 to expand the Supreme Court, close quote. Opponents to this tactic assert that the next time Republicans control the Senate and the presidency, they can simply expand the court to 17 or 23 or whatever it takes to stack the court in their favor. The last time this was attempted was in the days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who tried to expand the court when his policies were repeatedly struck down by conservatives on the Supreme Court. His effort failed. If you have thoughts on the Judiciary Act of 2021, you can contact your senators and congressperson. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This time of year, a lot of people are thinking, what can they do about all those allergies? There's so many things that can cause allergies. Animal dander, dust, food, mold. And this time of year, there are a lot of tree pollens out there. So when we're allergic to something, antibodies are produced by the body in response to the allergen. And it's these histamines that cause the itchy eyes, the sneezing, the scratchy throat, all that stuff. So, of course, it's always best to avoid the allergen if possible. But, you know, when it comes to pollen, it's everywhere. Well, there are herbs that can help allergies. Elderflower and elderberry are both anti-inflammatory and expectorant. They help to reduce bronchial and upper respiratory phlegm. Ginger is another good one that improves circulation and respiratory capacity. Dandelion leaf, root, and flower all help the body's ability to detoxify. Nettles is another one, and there's been a double-blind study done that shows that nettles significantly reduces all of the allergy response mechanisms of the body. So there, freeze-dried nettles. I also hear from many people that taking quercetin and bioflavonoids really help. Quercetin is a bioflavonoid, and they are said to stabilize mast cell membranes, thereby decreasing histamine release. So even if you're not allergic to a particular food during the hay fever season, it might be wise to minimize things that cause more phlegm than you need, because you probably have enough phlegm already. And that might mean dairy products and gluten. So, you know, we're so blessed. We live in a time where there's dairy-free and gluten-free options for just about all your favorite treats. I do find that eating some wild food, eating the dandelion leaves and the chickweed and the stinging nettle, learning to eat them and use them, I think it helps to make us stronger. So doing an herbal remedy can actually be supportive and nourishing to your system rather than just suppressing the symptoms. Drink more fluids, drink lemon and water, do your errands early in the day when pollen counts might be lowest. Consider using a neti pot to rinse some of the pollens out. You can do this. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Christian Garibay, Chiara De Mare, James Swinson, Alexis Kenyon, Elena Claver, Chris Moore, Brigitte Mars, and Rosanna Longobetter for their contributions to today's program.